All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the August 10th, 2021 VC HTTP API call. I'll go ahead and put the agenda in here. Today on the agenda, we have intros and reintros, the renaming poll. It's out there for review. We'll go live later this week. We have a 20-minute feature scoping discussion. Folks wanted to have a more in-depth discussion around scoping for the working group, and so we have some material to take us through that discussion. Based on that discussion, we've got one PR to process, and then we've got the simple majority objection to the GNAP stuff that we'll pick up at the end of the call. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else folks would like to cover today? All right. Seeing no additions, let's go ahead and jump right in. The first topic up here is intros and reintros. Is there anyone new to the call today?
Hey, Manu, it's Andrew Hughes. But I think I introduced myself to everyone on the CCG call earlier today.
Please go ahead again, Andrew. There are a couple of people that are different on this call.
So I've been away from the CCG and verifiable credential work for a couple of years, but I'm getting back into it, mostly around credential management topics as opposed to the purely technical protocol level discussions. Yeah, looking forward to the latest and greatest, trying to read up on the specs and see where we're at today.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. Wonderful to have you back. Bob, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, I'm Bob Wyman. I've been following these conversations for a very long time, I've just decided it's about time to get a little bit more serious about these things. So, greetings.
Wonderful. Welcome, Bob. What's your background, Bob? Just out of curiosity, what are you hoping to get out of the discussions and the calls?
Well, my background, well, I've been writing code since 1969. You know, worked for Digital, Microsoft, Google, did some startups, et cetera, did some of the earliest email systems. I was the first product manager for All-in-One, which sort of the first platform office automation system. Spent a couple of years trying to sell hypertext to guys at CERN. they had their own ideas. You know, internationalization, et cetera. I've spent most of my career working on technologies for essentially building what I think is the infrastructure for democracy, essentially facilitating the exchange of information, the storage of the human record, communication between people. And that's just what I've always been doing.
Awesome. That was a great intro, Bob. Wonderful to have you here, especially given that really amazing background. So welcome. Anyone else? Any other new folks, people that would like to reintroduce themselves? I think we've got intros from everyone else. All right. Great. Thank you. Welcome again, Andrew and Bob. Thrilled to have you guys here. All right. Next up on the agenda, people don't like the name VC HTTP API. It's kind of hard to say. We reached out to the group and said, hey, what are your ideas for renaming? We sent an email out to the group. So the first thing we did was we collected a bunch of names for about a week and a half. We then took those names and put them in a polling software that allows us to do all kinds of interesting things like instant runoff voting in border count polls and things like that. And so what we're going to try and do is get some community input on what people would like the name to change to. There are two polls. Sorry, there are two contests in this poll. The first contest is basically to rank your the options that you like. So if you've never done an instant runoff vote or something of that nature, you basically pick among the choices, you pick the ones you like, and then you rank them. You know, most liked to not as much liked. That's the first contest. The second contest is rate the things that you really don't want to see. So if there's some options there where you're like, it would be a disaster if the group picked that name, rank those. So you're basically ranking your most disliked things first and then all the way down to, things that you dislike, but not as much as the ones that are ranked higher. And the reason we're doing that is to just make absolutely sure that we don't end up picking a divisive, name. The poll is set to commence, 2 days from now, August 12th, beginning, Eastern time. We'll keep the poll open for a week. And it's basically open to the general public. It is open to, ideally it's CCG folks, and ideally, you know, vote if you have a part in the outcome, right? Don't just vote because you're trying to, you know, stuff ballots and things of that nature. Not that anybody would do that. But, you know, this is very much based on the honor system. So there's the renaming poll. The options are there. It was taken from community input. We are doing board account on both of them. There's an explanation of what board account is, but it's basically a way of picking among a set of things based on what people would prefer the most. There's a blog post about it more in depth there. That's it for the poll. Any questions, concerns about the poll? So if we don't hear any objections, we're going to open it up 2 days from now. Go ahead, Mike.
Quick question, Manu. The language on the second part about names you didn't definitely want, I think was the phrasing of it. It was a little unclear to me as to, like, if you're ranking it the highest, right, is that one you really, really don't want versus don't. Just double-check the language on that. That was the only thing I saw. Otherwise, it looked awesome.
Yes, and that is, your interpretation is correct, and I was very concerned about that part of the poll. I think there might be a high likelihood that people misunderstand it or don't read the explanation. So it's supposed to be ranked, I really, 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 really don't want to see this option as the top one, and then you basically keep adding the things that you don't want to see, but each subsequent one is, like, not as bad as the one before it. Or the one above it. Hopefully that made sense, Mike. That I'm trying to. I think you and I are saying the same thing. Hopefully,
yeah. That was the way I was reading it, but it was just I could see someone getting a little confused on that. So that was my only comment on that.
Yeah. And if anyone can think of a better way to phrase that, please send it to the mailing list and I'll update it. I did my best. It was difficult.
I'm confused. Do you really think these are not simply an inverse list?
No, so they may be. It really depends on the type of polling and voting mechanism that we use. What OpaVote allows you to do is you can change the runoff mechanism after the fact. So if we find out that people really didn't want board account, we can apply something else. But if we were to do that, then all of a sudden you can have conflicts between the things people wanted to see and the things people didn't want to see. So there are all kinds of voting concerns around the way we're doing this. So to make it just very explicit, we should end up with two lists that are inverses of each other at the very end if we use board account. But if we switch to a different polling mechanism or different tallying mechanism, that's not always true.
I meant in the ballot. not in the evaluation. In other words, it seems to me, if I give you my ordered list of preference, it's, you can start at 17, you can start at 1. These two ballots should end up identical if I'm internally psychologically consistent.
Unless you don't fill out all 17.
Yeah. That's true. Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's a real mind melt thinking about the ways polling. I mean, if anyone knows, you know, if you know about these polling algorithms, it is not straightforward. What can happen. So just to be extra safe, you know, we're doing the inverse. So we're doing rank your most liked and then rank your most disliked.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Any other questions? Queue's empty. I'm going to move on to the next topic. It's a great question. I struggled with that for about 30 minutes and had to go reading a lot of articles about polling algorithms. Okay, next item up, feature scoping. So the group wanted to have a discussion around feature scoping. This conversation could take the whole call. I'm giving it, you know, 20 minutes to see if folks, you know, if there's a easy place to start, but we may decide that there is no easy, place to start. So there is an email that went out to the mailing list. That I just put into, IRC email that went out to mailing list about this. And so there's a spreadsheet that attempts to summarize the current scope based on a variety of inputs. Attempt at summarizing current scope. So the inputs that were used to generate this list were the use cases document, the architecture diagrams, the current VC-HTTP API specification, and things that people have said over the past couple of months about the API. So let me go ahead and just do a screen share real quick so that we're all looking at the same thing. So the idea with this spreadsheet is that we're trying to talk about features that are in scope and out of scope. So definitely in scope and out of scope. The list isn't meant to be all encompassing. It's just meant to be kind of a current snapshot of where we are as a group. Each column provides kind of a dimension of the scoping question. So what roles are we talking about? What's the client application? What's the server application? What action is being performed? Is this viewed as internal to the trust boundary or external to the trust boundary? So basically, are you crossing a trust boundary when you use the API or not? Any notes that might help people better understand what we're talking about? And if we've specced it out to some degree, a link to where we've specced it out. All right, so we've got that for all the in-scope features and out-of-scope features. That email sent to the mailing list basically suggests, can we start here? It's not saying this is the final end-all be-all list. It's saying, does this seem like where the group is going today, and can we just resolve to say this is what we believe is in-scope and out-of-scope? So while we have the discussion today, during the discussion, the expectation is that, we are going to maybe modify things here, clarify things here, and so on, and so forth. So all that said, let's see if, there is anyone on the queue to comment about this. Adrian, you're up. Please go ahead.
Okay. So, as you guys all know, I'm concerned about the external trust boundary issues. And so what's unclear to me is if the client for all the external in-scope APIs is the holder application. then is the request that results in that presentation service coming in across an external boundary? And the second part of that is there an assumption that client credentials are involved in accepting the holder application as a client, as an external client? So I think those two questions are related, but they might be separate questions with separate answers.
Sorry, great. Thank you, Adrian. I'm trying to keep this on the screen so people can see. Next on the queue is Joe.
Thanks. So I'm just trying to make sense of the spreadsheet, and I'm a little confused, especially in the ones where things are doubled up, where the role is like issuer and verifier, using the issuer application, verifier application to verify VCs. And I'm struggling to understand why an issuer would verify VC. So I'm just not parsing that into a sentence that makes sense to me.
Got it. If I can just really quickly respond, the an issuer may have a verifier backend that it checks if it's given like a presentation. So if an issuer is like,
Hold on, but then they are not acting in the role of issuer. That's my point.
Got it.
Like in the initial framing that we came up with in the use case conversation was that, hey, there are these roles defined in the spec, and they talk to software, and those were the dominant paradigms. And we realized the holder was kind of unspecified because the holder doesn't have an equivalent in that's the newest stuff. But that there was an issuer role and an issuer service makes sense. That there's a verifier role and there's a verifier service, that made sense. This feels like a bunch of conflation of roles and the software.
So if I make these changes that I just made, Joe, are you happy with that? At least up here, I think we may need to duplicate this line.
Yes. If you think that doesn't lose any nuance of what you're trying to get, then great.
Yep. I don't think it does.
Okay.
And noting that we'll need to, well, I'll just do this right here as well. Apologies. Mike, you're up next.
Thanks. And I apologize that I have not been able to keep up with the mailing list. So maybe this question has been asked and answered. I see that a holder can, there's an external interface for a holder to present to a presentation service. But I do not see an interface for an issuer to deliver a credential to a holder. Maybe it's the holder is the client and the server is the issuer and the purposes is to obtain a credential. And I'm just wondering if that has been discussed, it's a deliberate omission or, the thinking of the group is there.
Yep.
Is it clear? What I'm asking?
I believe what you're talking about is one of these three items here, but we should discuss that more in depth. So let's, if you could, Mike, let's queue up to make sure that we're addressing it. I believe it's covered, but I want to make absolutely
sure.
I don't think it's one of those three for what it's worth, but yeah.
Okay. I'll queue up and give a better explanation with a use case. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Mike Prorock, you're up.
Yeah, just wanted to clarify on the first couple of out of scopes, kind of pushing that stuff over to hubs and ADVs. I think in theory, obviously, that's fine. I think where that just gets me a little bit is at least in my initial reading, from way back on the, APIs, that it was a REST API to handle operations around verifiable credentials, which typically implies not just kind of that C side of CRUD, right? Just the creation, which, issuing in this parlance, right? But also kind of read, update, delete, et cetera. I just want to make sure everyone's clear on that and what your thoughts are there as far as should we in fact maybe point out to that, even though it's, you know, as part of the spec, even though it's, you know, we're considering it out of bounds, et cetera, because there's a couple of ways that could be handled.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, we should talk about that a bit more. So I'm wondering if we should go back through. So Adrian's raised a couple of questions that I, you know, we really do need to, think about and talk about and address. So has Mike, Varley and Mike Prorock. So maybe, which one would be the easiest to address? My gut says Mike Prorock, yours might be the easiest out of those three to address. Do other folks have an opinion on which one might be the easiest to clarify? You can type it in the chat if you have a preference on where to start. So Mike, let me see if we can address Mike Prorock, let me see if we can address your concern quickly. So should we point out to EDVs or hubs as where you could read more about storage and retrieval of VCs? And this is just like you already have the VC, you just want to store it somewhere and you want to retrieve it and or you want to share it through some kind of, you know, authorization mechanism. I think that answer is easier because we can always decide that that is an important thing to tell people about, like, you know, how do you do read, update, delete in an EDV or hub, and so we should point out to that spec. I think that's one part of your question, Mike. Prorock, was that one of your questions?
Yeah, that I think that's getting at a lot of it there, because you know, the other option obviously is just to say, well, if we are going to follow REST conventions around verifiable credentials as kind of the core object that we're dealing with or object type, is just to say, you know, well, maybe we do define just a get, put, you know, those mm-hmm. kinds of basic REST operations. But that would be a little bit of a different thing than what we've been doing with this, even though we're calling it kind of REST with a controller pattern, et cetera, right?
Yeah. So if we were to accept this thing as being out of scope, it's predicated on the fact that we decide that we don't want to do those kinds of RESTful APIs, and we may change our mind 6 months down the road, right? So today we can say, yeah, we really want hubs and EDVs to do that, but we may get to a point where we go, you know what? We really do think, like, for completeness sake, that the VCHP API should define some kind of protocol around that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I just want at least, if we're going to call it out of scope, I think it's a fine starting place to do that, right? It's just like, let's make sure we're at least, you know, because the first question someone, an implementer will ask is like, well, then how do I do that, right? And as long as we're pointing them in the right direction, I think it's good.
Okay. So as a starting place, this may change if we decide that the VCHP API should have CRUD, should have read, update, delete, mechanisms. So if we add that, Mike Prorock, would that make you feel better about the out of scope statement?
Yeah, I think that's a little different than some of the other stuff that's like out of scope, right? It's kind of like that's a core function, but there's something else that does it, right? It's a little different than saying, no, this is just plain out of scope, right?
Okay. All right. So that update has been made. Was that the entirety of your concern though?
Yep. That got me. So.
Okay. Awesome. Mike, let's see, between Mike and Adrian's concern, What do folks want to tackle next? Go ahead, Joe. Apologies for doing the queue weird. Go ahead, Joe.
That's all right. It's not clear to me if this is a new issue or a non-issue. We added this presentation service. What's that?
Yes. Great question. The presentation, so we have this thing that we were calling like a holder service, and I believe it was confusing people, right? So holder services could be viewed as generating a verifiable presentation or creating a derived credential or presentation, right? Whereas presentation services are about exchanging presentations. So these are about deriving, you know, creating presentations and deriving presentations and credentials. These are really about presentation exchange. So I tried to give it a name. As a presentation service, it's probably the wrong name, but I tried to separate that from purely holder services, which are still a bit of a hand wave. And I also tried to separate holder services from storage services, right?
Right. So I could see there being a presentation transport something, but presentations are fundamentally created under the moral authority of the holder. So I don't think distinguishing those two services as different helps us.
You mean you're saying the generation of presentations and the exchange of presentations you believe should be called the same thing?
That's right. When I need a presentation in transport, it's the holder software that's going to create that and give it to the right party.
Okay.
I don't think transport is a service, I guess, is what I'm saying. I think that's a category error.
Okay. So you think these should be called holder service?
Well, all of the services do something, and they don't say how you communicate with it. The transport was a different thing altogether.
Okay. What so are you suggesting that we change this back to holder service or keep it the same?
Holder service. I understand the client server dance between the holder and the holder service. And maybe that's a wallet, you know, is another name. I think that's what most of us call it, but
okay.
I'm not proposing it as wallet. I understand the overloading of wallet right now.
Gotcha. I'm concerned that we may get a field of Mike and Adrian's concerns, and I do want to get back to them as quickly as we can.
Yep.
Ori, go ahead.
I think it's a mistake to conflate APIs that are meant to be accessed within the same trust domain versus the APIs for crossing the trust domain. So I think it's helpful to split these things up because we've spent a lot of time, with folks who've been conflating them. And so I think giving them separate names is helpful. You know, in the same way that the issuer API is an internal API between issuer service and, you know, issuer backend. The holder APIs are also like that. But then there's this process of once you have the ability to get presentations, can you interact across a trust boundary? We call that exchange typically. I don't think it's a good idea to conflate them because I've seen a lot of confusion over conflating them.
Yep, agreed. Joe, would you object if we just didn't name it right now? And decided that later?
If we call it exchange, I would like holder exchange or credential exchange or something. I could go with that. To me, part of the conflation was transport and service are two different things. I need transport to interact with any service. So.
Okay. Would you object to us not naming it just now and taking a bit more
time? I would not.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Mike, do you feel your item is easier, more difficult to address than Adrian's question?
Adrian, why don't you go first? Actually, I think Adrian's is easier to address, so why don't we maybe address that one first?
All right. Go ahead, Adrian.
Well, to start with, my question is about crossing the trust boundary with a request. So simply put, a request for a credential or a presentation or anything else merely requires authentication of the subject of the credential. however that's done, and that's clearly out of scope for anything we're talking about here. So it can be internal in the sense of this chart. But as soon as you bring in an external client, you introduce the issue of client credentials or censorship or certification of the client. And so my question relates to this this issue of a request, so in other words, to finish up, if the request is an API rather than, say, a form after you authenticate, then that request API is now potentially an external trust boundary, just like the client coming to fetch the credential or presentation is crossing, is an external trust boundary thing. And that's my question.
Okay, great. Thanks, Adrian. David Chadwick, you're in the queue, and then Indra Hughes.
Yeah, I'm going to repeat a comment I made probably more than 6 months ago, and that is, to my mind, it's best if we have an architecture diagram showing all the microservices, and then it becomes much easier to see which HTTP APIs we're talking about and which services we're talking about, because we've got picture of the architecture, the different components, and these are the services that each of the microservices are providing.
Great. Thank you, David. We have that in the spec today in the architecture overview. We have examples for every, the issuer detail, the holder detail, and the verifier detail. We got consensus, at least preliminary consensus, to put this in the document, and then all the links are here. Now, it's not a perfect mapping, but I believe we've done that work. David, didn't know if you had seen that yet.
Yeah, I did see it, but I also saw comments say, we agree that this isn't the right diagram yet, but we're going to put it in for now and fix it later, or worse to that effect.
Okay.
So maybe we should fix the architecture first and then go and define the APIs.
All right. Thanks, David. Andrew, you're up next.
Sure. Just a quick response to Adrian, one of the statements that Adrian made, just to clarify. Said that the subject of the credential authenticates before obtaining the credential, to paraphrase. I just want to confirm that the subject of the credential isn't the only receiver of a credential permission and service, right? So the credential being issued doesn't have to actually be about the interactive subject. It can be about anything.
Yep.
Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, it's not guaranteed to be whoever's interacting with it. The subject is not guaranteed to be whoever's interacting with it. All right. I'm up next. So Adrian, I believe, and this is not going to be a clean answer to, I think, what you're asking. I believe one class of the things that you're talking about, Adrian, have to do with this area, the stuff that's out of scope, but is clearly has authorization, you know, built into it. Like the cruise ship use case that you have, large swaths of it can be accomplished using these APIs, not necessarily these APIs. Like all the exchange and delegation and ensuring that there's no censorship happening, we could depend on these APIs to do it. And in those cases, the trust boundary is questionable about whether it's internal or external. Because in the cruise ship case, the trust boundary is external, and there's a big open question about when you do authorization, are you still within the same trust boundary, or are you crossing trust boundaries? Right. So I believe, Adrian, one way to address your authorization concerns is to depend on these APIs instead of these APIs up here. These APIs up here are effectively the same as what we do with verifiable presentation request and Chappie, and even some of the, and this, you know, some of the wacky PEX stuff, right? And those mechanisms have authentication of some kind, not necessarily authorization. But if you remember, if you're using DIDs of some kind, you can do delegation there. You can provide, you know, you can provide guardianship and all those things on the DID through some form of delegation to sign through the DID document, all that kind of stuff. So these mechanisms require authentication of one kind or another, but you can actually do delegation in some scenarios there as well. So I think in both of these cases, we support delegation of some kind. Here, it is very clear how we support delegated authorization. Here, it's less clear, but we definitely have examples of us, you know, of us theoretically being able to do it up there. That wasn't a clean answer to your question, Adrian, but I do think this is that the crux of your concern here is that I believe you might be saying, well, this is where, you know, authorization and delegation needs to happen, where some people are saying, no, it's probably down here, right? And in fact, these are kind of open endpoints that anybody can hit. And the authorization and delegation happens, you know, later. And in many cases, authorization doesn't happen at all. It doesn't need to happen. Anybody can hit the endpoint. Which means that, you don't need client credentials to hit it, right? Which means that in theory, you should not be able to be, censored, you know, censored in a number of different cases. Anyway, I'll stop there. Adrian, you're back on the queue, and then, we'll probably want to go to Mike to make sure he's got a chance to speak.
Go ahead, Adrian. Mike was ahead of me.
Mike was on the queue. Well, I don't know. Mike, if you want to speak, please, speak. Mike's on the queue to present his concern about the list that we have here.
Yeah, just go ahead, Adrian, please.
Okay. So, the features that are out of scope, they're just out of scope and I don't care. I'm not talking about them at all. The point that you are making that there's an external API, that I'm not understanding is whether there's a request API that is also external. So in other words,
request for what, Adrian? Could you clarify?
Request for a credential or a presentation.
Yes. So this is an API that you can hit. There's a pull-based flow and a push-based flow. These are both external APIs, and you hit those APIs because you want to either initiate a presentation or you want somebody else to initiate a presentation. So these are external APIs. They don't have any kind of authentication. They don't have any kind of authorization on them. They're open API. They're completely open APIs, and people hit the APIs in order to initiate a presentation flow.
So somebody comes to one of those three external APIs with a request.
What are they requesting?
They're requesting some kind of a credential or a presentation.
That's this one here, I believe.
This is the one.
It's this one here. So it's, let's see, is that true? This API, the one that's highlighted is, let's say it's you, Adrian, it's you and I are communicating. I'm going to ping you here and say, I want you to start a presentation flow with me. And then you are going to initiate the presentation. So it's, hey, Adrian, I want you to contact me and start a presentation.
Manu, can you be clear about what role you're in and what role, Adrian's in? Because I got lost in terms of what are you? I couldn't follow.
Help me, traceability folks. This is your endpoint. Can someone in traceability answer that question?
So the current endpoints for doing presentation exchange in the API as defined in the YAML documents today are a push-based flow from a prover to a verifier. So in that flow, the prover says, hey, verifier, I'm going to try and present to you some critical trade document. The verifier responds with a domain and challenge and a query, which the prover can use to satisfy that request. The prover then constructs their presentation and submits it to the verifier. So it isn't it's a push-based flow for presenting content to a verifier. Like, you have a verifier that knows you and that is going to accept presentations from you. And this exchange, these APIs here allow for you to push that information to them via HTTP. I think potentially what's confusing is that many people think about verifier flows from a pull perspective. Like, a verifier has a QR code on their website that says, enter your COVID vaccination passport to get a 10% discount on buying face masks or something like that, right? And in that case, the verifier is kind of advertising here, like, come submit presentations to me. But that's not how this particular set of APIs that are defined today are set up. They're set up from the perspective of holders are pushing content to verifiers.
All right. Thank you, Ori. Ted, you're on the queue, and then Joe.
Yeah, I'm thinking that some of this would be clearer if the action came before the role client server.
So, like that.
Yep. And I'm also going to suggest that these APIs be numbered in a persistent fashion such that we can refer to 6 through 10 are the ones you're talking about, right? Or whatever.
Okay. Insert one left. What is that going to be called? I'll just call it number right now. There's an easier way to do this. I know there is. Okay. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I think one of the things we're missing here is that we haven't clarified the initiator. I thought we had, but what Ori just said suggested some conflation around that and miscommunication around that. When I read 7 with the role of holder, I thought that was a holder initiating that interaction. But Ori spoke about a totally valid use case where that transaction is initiated by someone else. And so I don't think we have a way to tease that out with the way we're talking about it right now.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joe. I'll add that I am also confused about 7 and 8. I kept going back and forth on whether or not they're the same thing or if they're different. I went back to, we have a pull-based flow and a push-based flow, but what I heard you say, Ori, was exactly the same as what I thought this 8 was doing. So that's why I'm confused. So we need probably to talk about these two items so that we can have a bit further clarity around that.
So okay. I just want to add, I think it's a good task for the use case guys to pick up that identifying who can initiate which APIs, I think would be very useful as a distinction here, especially because okay. I think Ori's suggestion is important and we're not dealing with it well.
Okay, great. Let's see. Adrian, I want to get to Mike, and we've got 12 minutes left. Is there anything you feel you could add to the conversation at this point that would help us have a longer discussion about this on the mailing list? Like, is there anything where you're like, no, I'm still very concerned about X not happening or Y not happening?
Yeah, no, I'm still as confused as when I asked the question, but it is, you know, I did pose it in different words on the in response to your posting the spreadsheet. So I don't think we're going to resolve it today. So anyway, yes. No, go ahead. I don't have anything more to add.
Okay.
People
Okay. If we could maybe move that particular conversation to the mailing list, I feel like we're getting closer, Adrian, to addressing your concern here. But you know, maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. Go ahead, Ori, and then we're going to go to Mike.
So if you think about these exchange APIs as a kind of machine to machine connection between two backend office services that are run by, you know, organizations that, you know, act with legal compliance and that are regulated, et cetera, that this kind of flow of like machine one is authenticated with a service connection to machine two and pushes that other machine some content. That's pretty common in a backend API sort of scenario. Like you have one system that needs to push data to another system. And sometimes that's interactive push and sometimes it's just direct, like fire and forget. This is an interactive one. So machine one says, I'm authenticated. You know me. Great. And then it says, here's some data that I want to provide to you. Do you have any comments? And machine two responds, here's what I'd like. And then machine one says, here you go. It's that simple. It's two services. And the important part is the word service there because it is a web service. It is not a human. It is an API that's responding to HTTP verbs from one trust domain to another. So I think it's just important to consider like, what are we really trying to do here? We're just trying to make it so that two organizations can present credentials to each other. And this is the first API that this particular family of APIs has ever had that crossed a trust domain. Thanks.
Thanks, Ori. All right, Mike, let's get into your concern.
Thank you. So the concern, I guess, is I see through 789, sort of, machine to machine or application to service, API calls to deliver a presentation from a holder to another holder or possibly a verifier. That question mark service. What I don't see is the delivery mechanism where perhaps a holder and an issuer have interacted, and now a holder would like to call the issuer to say, you know, deliver me the credential that we've negotiated, and it's a credential, not a presentation. So this is the same as in Chappie, that store call, right, where the issuer has done everything it needs to do to authenticate and get into session with the holder and now just wants to deliver that credential to the holder. And actually I don't see it in scope or out of scope. So that's kind of my question.
Yeah. So that is this call right here. So if what you want to do is Chappie, this thing, the to be specified thing is the thing that you're going to call, right? And what's not clear right now is how much of an overlap is there between this one, the pull-based flow, or, you know, Tori's calling it like a push-based flow. I think of it as a pull-based flow. So like we need to get that terminology straightened out.
Okay.
But this is the, if you want to do Chappie, you can do Chappie on VCHTTP API using this API, right?
Okay. So to be clear, on this line eight, then, the communication could result in a verifiable credential being provided to the holder.
That's right. In a verifiable, in a presentation, verifiable or not, from the issuer. So that's exactly what happens with Chappie today, is you hit the site and you're like, I want to start an interaction with you. The site's like, here's your challenge and nonce and domain and whatever else.
Yeah.
Right. And then you respond back with a didauth response.
Right.
And then the site goes, okay, I've got the didauth response. I know what your did is. Here's your credential, or I would now like you to present a different set of credentials to me. So the reason this is called start and continue presentation flow is that at when there's a response, the response will tell you if the server wants you to continue mm-hmm. at another location. So you can go back and forth, like A to B, B to A, A to B, B to A, as many times as you want mm-hmm. and create really rich kind of flows from that. So the first exchange can be a DDoS. The second exchange can be just giving, you know, some, like a profile picture and a username and a, you know, home address or whatever. Uh-huh. And then it'll respond back with a, okay, here's your verifiable credential for your whatever, employee ID card, driver's license, you know, bill of lading, whatever.
Okay.
So that whole back and forth exchange that you do in Chappie today, you should be able to do with number 8 here.
Okay.
Did that make
understood sense? Now. Yeah, I think we'll take the rest of the naming concerns around that to the list, right? But thank you very much for clarifying. Understood.
Okay, awesome. Let's see. Q, Ori, go ahead.
Yeah, so the endpoints that this API defines are pulled directly from Chappie behavior and, in fact, the VP request spec objects. So if you look at their content, they look like VP request JSON objects. In those cases, I think the important thing to note on, like, the word push versus pull is there's always a first actor, an initiator, like a first entity in any protocol, right? In this case, the first entity for these APIs is the same entity that's going to present the presentation at the end. And the reason that they aren't just sending a presentation in their first interaction is that they don't have a domain or challenge that they will need to sign over to complete that presentation. So their first interaction is to go get a domain and challenge, which they can then prove liveliness and control of private key material by signing over in their verifiable presentation, which is the second endpoint that they're submitting to. First endpoint gets the domain and challenge, and the response from that first endpoint looks like what a Chappie website tells a Chappie wallet the website is requesting. And the response to that looks like a verifiable presentation, which is what a Chappie wallet provides to a Chappie website.
Yep. Yeah, we're really close. It's killing me that we're out of time. Okay. Yeah. So that was great. So, unfortunately we are out of time, but I think this was like a really productive conversation. We didn't get to pull requests. We didn't get to the simple majority objection on GNAP. We will cover that next week. I guess the question to the group is this, is this spreadsheet and the endpoints we're talking about and where we've grouped things, is it going in the right direction? Like, are we missing a line in here, like a major line item? If we are, please, you know, mention it on the mailing list, talk to why we're missing it. Is there something out of scope that should be in scope? Is there something in scope that should be out of scope? Like, is the bucketing right here? So in general, so Mike's saying, you know, right direction. The hope here is that we can use this spreadsheet to just do a rough first estimation of this is what's in scope, this is what's out of scope. Joe, do you feel like the use case folks could take a look at this and maybe make an iteration and come back with thoughts next call? Or two calls from now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we could.
Juan, what's your availability? I know Eric's out this week, so it would just be you and I.
Yeah, I could make the time.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take a stab at it.
Awesome. And if you could send something to the mailing list so that other folks could maybe we could prime the conversation a bit. But I think at this point we're just looking for like major objections, like this is totally wrong. It's the wrong framing. And if not, we'll just keep going and iterating on this. I think, you know, the conversation that we had today around these items was great. Like, I think we need to keep having those types of conversations. And then at some point we'll say, all right, this is the preliminary high level where we want to go. And then we'll have our scope, right? And hopefully that'll help us make a couple more decisions. Okay, that's it for the call this week. Thank you, everyone, for a very productive call. We'll chat again next week. Thanks all. Bye.